He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider and Lakers lead creator for Offside. And today on the show, we will be discussing a few things off the top. I want to discuss some of last night and some of my analysis from last night. You know, I recorded a really quick recap, obviously, for Offside last night, and then I recorded a Lowdown Lounge in between type episode this morning that I want to just clear one thing up on. I've also noticed recently a lot of kind of angst nationally over Austin's new contract and more upcoming contract this upcoming season, which really kind of surprises me that you know, I don't know where that's really coming from. So we'll talk about that. And then seeing as the Lakers played Sunday night and seeing as they played again last night, I'm going to go ahead and record this week's mailbag today. Normally, I would have Harrison on today. It's a Tuesday, but he is out and about doing some stuff. I think getting ready for Halloween, he said, is what he was going to do. So the plan here today is to record the mailbag today. And then on Thursday, he and I will record. I think the Lakers play in an away game between now and, you know, I think tomorrow, I think they're away. I'll just double check that again. As they are away, that would make it. Yeah, they play in Minnesota tomorrow, and Minnesota won't have Anthony Edwards. But tomorrow I am going to have Raj on the show after that Minnesota game, after those two broken teams play each other. So that's the plan for the rest of the week. Just kind of clarifying before we get going. Do you have one comment from or question from the iTunes reviews, which, you know, as a reminder, best way to get your show or your topic covered on the show is to leave it in the form of a five-star review. You could leave super comments, obviously, but if you leave an iTunes review, it's free. So, you know, that's your call. Over the course of this episode, I am going to be answering as many questions as I possibly can, whether it's from Twitter, whether it's from the live chat here, and I'm gonna peace out as soon as those questions run out. So get your questions in now, get your questions in quickly, and I will get to as many of them as I can over the course of the show. I need to be very, very clear because I had somebody really, really angry at me last time I did something like this when I didn't answer literally every question posed, because it is like it that I would have been here still today had I done that on that same episode, which wouldn't be efficient or effective for any of us. So, but leave your questions, whether you want to do super chat or regular chat, whatever. I'm going to get to as many of them over the course of the show as I possibly can before Miles wakes up, which should be, I'm going to go ahead and guess, in about, I don't know, 40 minutes or so. And then I'll pop off here. So let's go ahead and get going. I want to start with the kind of final notes from last night's game. So I was very hard on the Lakers last night and this morning in response to the Lakers losing to the Portland Trailblazers. And I want to be clear, like, my animosity or the annoyance that I felt after last night's game had nothing to do with the players who actually played. I thought basically all of them played really hard and competed to the best of their abilities last night. I just think that the talent disparity was such that there was no beating like that. I'm nervous about a game four games into the season where you enter the game against the Portland Trailblazers and feel like the Lakers don't really have a chance, or that margin for error is basically none. And then when they started the game shooting really poor, you're like, okay, yeah, they're not going to win tonight. And I don't know. I do think Portland is up and coming, and I do think their defense is real. So, like, maybe they'll contend in the Western Conference this year. But for the most part, I think they're probably going to be a play-in team or, yeah, I think they'll be a play-in team this year. And if you're entering a game against a play-in team and you have basically zero margin for error, I don't care how broken you are, that probably doesn't say much about the job that was done in building out the roster. So as far as like my concern or how annoyed I was watching that game last night, again, it had nothing to do with the guys who were actually playing. My annoyance was with the people who put those guys in that spot in the first place. It's like watching the Dodgers game last night. And to me, the most stressful moment of the game was when Kershaw came in to face the Blue Jays with the bases loaded. And, you know the narrative about this guy. You know that he struggled in the postseason. And some of it, I think, is somewhat unfair because he has always, over the course of his career, had to go an extra inning either because the bullpen wasn't very good or the game was too close to go to the bullpen or whatever. And it was like, oh, great. The Dodgers offense put Clayton Kershaw into a spot he has no business being in and might not, you know, chances are might struggle here. And everybody's going to laugh at Kershaw there. It's going to be the last time he pitches maybe at Dodgers Stadium. And that's how we're going to see this dude go out. And fortunately, he got out of the jam and he was able to make it work. But like had Kershaw struggled in that moment, I wouldn't have been angry at a retirement year Clayton Kershaw for not coming through then. I would have been angry at the Dodgers for putting him in that spot in the first place, whether it was Dave Roberts making that decision or whether it was the Dodgers offense struggling to the point where you had, you know, Dave Roberts had to make that decision. And that's where I'm at right now, where it's like, I'm not angry at Jared Vanderbilt or Austin Reeves or Bronny James or Nick Smith. Like I wasn't angry at those guys for losing last night. It got annoying when like Jake LaRavia couldn't throw a pee in the ocean. That was tough to watch. But to me, the much larger issue was getting into that spot where, like I said this morning, you knew you were going to have injury issues this year. You have an age 41 LeBron. You have a Luka Doncic who has struggled with availability over the course of his career. You have Marcus Smart, who is only on your team right now because he was bought out, because he has dealt with injury concerns the last couple of years. You know, Jared Vanderbilt has been hurt. Maxi Kleba hasn't had a healthy season in years. And yet the bottom third of your roster is made up of these projects who either may never pan out, or if they ever do pan out, it'll be way after this timeline, right? So like that was like the way that last night's game went to me was a reflection on an organization that still doesn't quite understand how to put a sensible roster together while it has stars at the top of it, like Luka, like LeBron. The goal isn't to build out for the future with this kind of a group. The goal is to maximize your opportunity now. So the Adu Theros of the world, the Bronny James of the world, the Nick Smith Juniors of the world. Previously, they had like Maxwell Lewis in their group and Jalen Huchefino and, you know, Dalton Connect falls into this category. These guys who are years away from really helping right now, those guys are useless in this timeline. And so when you lose a game like that, like you did last night in a Western Conference where, you know, every win and loss is really going to matter. Well, that to me speaks to, again, this front office that I just don't think is very good. So I want to be absolutely clear. I have no problem with the guys who played last night. I thought Austin competed really, really well. And there's only so much you can do when you're going up against a defensive backcourt of Drew Holiday and Tumani Kamara. Like, those guys are really bleeping good. And the Lakers didn't have anybody else who could viably bring the ball up the court. I thought Austin competed his ass off, still scored 41 points. I thought Vanderbilt played one of his better games, and his recent play has been really fun to watch, where I do think because of these injuries, he's had more time to really kind of play himself into the rhythm of the game. And I think there might be a lesson there. I think DeAndre Ayton and Austin as a pick and roll backcourt or a pick and roll combination has been really fun to watch. And I think these reps that they're getting right now are going to help the Lakers down the line when those guys are going to be carrying the second unit. Like, there were things to like from last night's game from a purely basketball standpoint. My problem is it was hard to talk about any of that stuff or hard to really care about very much of that stuff because you got into the fourth game of the season and you're missing half of your NBA roster. All right. I'm going to go ahead and segue on over to Austin and his impending free agency. So I listened recently to the Hoop Collective pod with Brian Windhorst and Tim McMahon and Tim Bontemps, all three guys who I really like, by the way. So like when I critique the pod or critique the subject matter of the pod or in this case, Tim Bontemps' analysis on the pod has nothing to do with them personally. I like those guys as guys. But I was listening to their show, and Tim Bontemps, he was talking about how, like, Austin Reaves has obviously been playing really well at the beginning of the season. He's averaging all-star numbers right now. Will they continue all the way through to the all-star break? Maybe not, but still. And his I actually think Tim McMahon kind of poked fun at him where it was like Austin Reaves is playing really well and here's why that's a problem according to Tim Bontemps. And the reason that according to Bontemps that it would be a quote unquote problem is because of Austin Reaves' upcoming free agency, which by the way, it does come with some inherent risk, right? Anytime somebody is going to be a free agent and has that free will to be able to sign wherever, he can, there are obviously some risks involved there. I did talk to somebody just before this podcast who was very close to Austin and asked, like, hey, you guys are on good terms with the Lakers, right? And you guys are going to clear, when it comes time for Austin to opt out, and then when it comes time for Austin to sign his next deal, wherever it might be, the Lakers will certainly get their opportunity to make their best offer to Austin because you guys are on good terms with each other, right? And it was like, yes, absolutely. And that's so as of right now, as of October 28th at 3:59 Central Time, there is no concern that like Austin would immediately, sign some kind of offer that the Lakers would have no opportunity to present or before the Lakers have any kind of opportunity to present. The Lakers will have an exclusive window to negotiate with Austin. And I would imagine during that time, the Lakers and Austin will come to an agreement on his next deal, which I would imagine again, will probably be a 2-1 or a 3-1 type deal worth in the range of $35 million or so and starting there and then kind of escalating from there and everybody will move on. And I was reading Sam Amick of The Athletic today. And in his article, he again brought up, Austin sure is playing really well, man, that free agency is going to get kind of tricky. And it's like, no, I don't think it will. Now, in fairness to Sam, another guy who I really like, he also presented it as like, Austin really likes LA and he really wants to be on a contender and that playing alongside Luka will seem to give him the opportunity to be on a contender in LA. And I think that will present some, and according to Sam, that would present some stability and some, increase the likelihood that he would, Austin would resign. All of which obviously I can confirm. But again, what Sam's piece and Tim's analysis was kind of taking for granted was this idea that, well, the Lakers, what's their books going to look like when you have Austin Reaves on it, to the tune of 35 to whatever $1 million a year. And will they be able to build out a contender from there on out? And it's like, I guess that's a bit of a concern. The problem, the thing is, the Lakers heading into the season, we've covered it quite a bit on this show and on various, you know, radio hits and stuff that I've done, basically since this plan was kind of enacted, the Lakers wanted to be as flexible as they could possibly be this upcoming summer, for the chance that Giannis Antetokounmpo might grow sick of the direction that things are going in Milwaukee. And, you know, the Lakers wanted to position themselves with the cleanest books possible, whether it's to, I don't believe they'll be able to sign him outright this summer, but you know, you could trade for him into cap space, and you can do this thing where, like, if you do trade for Giannis, you could send back contracts to Milwaukee and trade for him into the remaining cap space that you have, and have none of those contracts that go to Milwaukee be of the bad variety, right? The kind that Milwaukee wouldn't want. And so, like, and look, like, I already see it in the chat. So I have Moneyboy 277. The Giannis thing is not happening. You're right. It might not be. I don't know. But that doesn't change the fact that the Lakers have a ton of cap space this upcoming year. The only guys that they have on their books heading into, you know, this summer with on fully guaranteed contracts are Luka Doncic, right, who just signed his extension, his max extension, and Jared Vanderbilt, who is on one of the kind of more annoying contracts in the league, in my opinion. Outside of that, the Lakers have, you know, you have Rui on an expiring, you have LeBron on an expiring, DeAndre Ayton, Marcus Smart, Gabe Vincent, Maxi Kleba. I guess Dalton Connect, because the Lakers picked up his team option. He'll also be on the books for like $4 million this summer. But like the Lakers will have plenty of cap space to be able to offer Austin Reeves whatever contract he wants, and they'll have his bird rights, and he has a low enough cap hold to where the Lakers would be able to do whatever they want or whatever they need. Again, this is all taking for granted that the Lakers and Austin would be on good enough terms to make this work together. But at least theoretically, and given what I know of that situation, I do think it's something that we can take into account as a possibility. But the Lakers could go into this summer. Like, one thing that I would maybe look for is LeBron's decision one way or another being made relatively quickly. So if he's going to retire, he'll retire. If he's going to sign somewhere else, he'll let the Lakers know I'm peacing out, or, you know, maybe he's traded between now and then. I don't know. But I think LeBron, because he is going to have a bigger cap hold, I think the Lakers would like to get him on the books if he is going to be a Laker beyond this season, relatively quickly, so that now, like, you kind of know exactly what you're working with. And Austin is a different kind of situation where, because he's only making, like, I think he's $14 million or so this year, his cap hold is that plus an extra percentage. And it's a really small number relative to what he's eventually going to sign for. So what the Lakers will probably look to do is talk to Austin, say, hey, what kind of ballpark are you looking for? Here's the ballpark that we're looking at. Let's figure out what that number is eventually going to be. And we'll write that in pencil so that, you know, when the time comes to write it in ink, we're ready to write it in ink. But can we do all this other stuff elsewhere on the roster before coming back and inking that contract or inking that agreement? You know, an agreement that the Lakers would be able to come to using bird rights, which would allow them to go up over the cap, right? So that's kind of how I see this kind of playing out. And all of this, and the reason I can kind of see this playing out that way is because it's exactly what the Lakers have been planning for. They've known since the moment Austin Reeves signed the contract that he's currently on, which everybody knew, by the way, was below market value. The Lakers have been preparing themselves for the likelihood, not possibility, likelihood that we would reach this point here a couple of years, few years into his contract, where at the end of it, he's going to opt out. He's going to turn down that player option. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent for the first time in his career, in the prime of his playing career, and will fetch plenty of offers, right? Like, the guy that is producing in the way that he is currently producing, there's going to be plenty of teams who really, really want that guy. So, and as such, the Lakers, that's part of like there's the Giannis plan, but I also think they've also had a bit of an Austin plan where they have prepared themselves. They have outlined what he's probably going to go for and what they probably are going to have to bring him back at. And they have basically planned for this big raise. Now, where I do get a little tweaked, right, is, yeah, you can plan for this raise. You can plan for all of these hypotheticals. But also, can we try competing now? And especially while you, like, if they know that Austin is eventually going to be worth probably three times what his current contract is paying him, or between two and three times what his current contract is paying him, like, that doesn't mean Austin is going to be two or three times the player next year. It just means that he was in line for a raise. So why not maximize this opportunity while you know you have this guy well below market value and really go for it this year? And then, you know, work with whatever you have to work with after this season. That, to me, has always felt like the most practical approach to this whole situation. And we'll see if that's actually how this all plays out. But yeah, I would like to see the Lakers handle this, you know, in a way that gets Austin paid, but also gives themselves some flexibility. And we'll see if they're able to do that. All right. Let's go ahead and dive on into your guys' questions. I have not noticed any. Let's see. I'm going to do this. Oh, that's too tall. I'm going to go here with regular. And all right. So I'm going to answer your guys' questions in the chat when I can get to them. My priority here is to QBreezy12, who wrote on iTunes, "I've seen enough. How do we get Wemby to pair with Luka?" Wemby is, I know other people have made this point, I'll make it too. When I was a kid, I used to play, back then it was before 2K really took hold. It was NBA Live, whatever year, right? So it was NBA Live 98, NBA Live, whatever. And I used to play it before we had video gaming consoles. I used to play on my parents' desktop computers, right? So I remember there was one where Tim Hardaway Sr. Was on the cover for it. So I forget which NBA Live year this was. It was an EA Sports game, and it was like the first year that you could do like a creative player. And so I created a player and absolutely maximize this dude's stats. And I was like 10 or 12 years old, so I just made the guy 7'6", and I made him able to shoot from three, and I made him able to do, you know, he had 99 handles and 99 dunks and 99, and it was just like the, like, and I named him that for myself because one day I was going to be 7'6". So I remember doing this, and my dad walks in and he sees this guy. He's like, "I don't think the Lakers have a guy that tall." I was like, "Yeah, I created a player," and I showed him kind of how I did it. And he was like, "Oh, that's kind of cool. All right. That's awesome. I don't know why you created somebody that ridiculous. We'll never see a player like that." Now you fast forward to this, and here's Wemby. Like, he's that player. And you know, I took it the next step. I was like, "Well, shoot, if I could create one, how many guys could I create onto this roster?" And I eventually had, like, I think the most you can create back then was six or seven. So I had seven guys who I named after my basketball and soccer teammate friends, right? So I had seven guys on the Lakers who were 7'5" or 7'6", and they could all shoot, they could all handle the basketball, they could all pass, they all defended really well. And yeah, suffice it to say, I won a lot of those games with those teams. And my dad would always walk in. He's like, "Dang, you don't get sick of beating these teams by like 40 every game?" And I'm like, "No, not really. I this is kind of fun." And you know, I think it's probably what prepared me for Dodgers fandom at this point, right? Because it's like, All right, yeah, this team can win the World Series this year. Let's I can't wait for this upcoming offseason when the Dodgers might be able to sign a center fielder who can put the ball in play, unlike Andy Páez has been able to. So yeah, I was like watching this and Wemby just comes to mind is like this creative player who, like, there's a clip right now going around of him putting a defender on skates at 7'6". That seems unfair. He has a silky smooth jumper that, you know, he can get off at any time from anywhere on the court, and it always looks like it has a really good chance. I have a neighbor across the street who's taking his son to play to watch Wemby play, I think, in a few weeks or so. And I told him, I was like, get seats as low to the court as you possibly can, because it really highlights how tall this dude is. It really, like, when you watch Wemby play in person, it's like watching CGI. It's that scene from Jurassic Park where it's like da na 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 da na na, and it's like the brachiosauruses walking in the background and all of these dinosaurs, and it's, you know, John Hammond, that character, is like, just, you know, welcome to Jurassic Park, and it's just like, wow, this is insane. And to me, it's like you could do that scene, but with a bunch of Wemby plays, like, welcome to Wemby's era. Da-na-na-na, psh, da-na-na-na, block shot, da-na-na, 38-foot jumper. So, yeah, I'm with you. Long story short here, QBreezy 12, give me Wemby and Luka as quickly as you possibly can. They would be, I think, the best duo to have ever played together. I think if you could somehow put Luka Doncic on a team with Victor Wembanyama, that would wind up being, and then they're, if they're in their primes, that would wind up being the best duo who has ever played together. It would be better than Michael and Scottie. It would be better than LeBron and AD. It would be better than Kobe and Shaq. It would be absolutely outrageous, to see what those guys, could do together. So yeah, let's make it happen. And look, I'll say this. The Lakers' current track record is that of bringing in the top stars in the game basically whenever they're available. And Mark Walter and Guggenheim have that same track record with the Dodgers as well. So I don't think that weakness or that strength is going anywhere. What I do think is that, like, the weaknesses that we see in this organization are going to be supplemented in a way to where they might become strengths. And that's the thing I am most excited about as this sale hopefully goes through in the next couple of weeks or so. And whenever that happens and all that stuff, I'm not going to say that the Lakers have no shot at ever landing Victor Wembanyama. He does seem like a loyal guy, and he did pump his fist when the Spurs won the lottery. That was actually the first moment that I was like, oh, damn it, this guy's going to be really good. He understands, like, which team to go to. But I can't say that the Lakers will never employ Wemby. I can't, because, you know, the Lakers have a track record of getting that guy, and, you know, more often than not. So hopefully we'll be able to watch him in a Laker uniform one day. Please. All right, let's go ahead and jump on into your guys' comments here in the chat. So, Omaris Hall, how does JJ maximize this AR when LeBron and Luka return? They just stand around and take turns. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, JJ has kind of alluded to, what were they called? Like the utility plays, I think is what he called them, that Sean McVay has with, like, you know, Matthew Stafford obviously is going to touch the ball whenever, but, you know, Kyron Williams plays and Devontae Adams plays and Puka Nacua plays, right? Like plays where as many of those guys are involved as possible. And those are the plays that the Rams run when they need to, you know, get to the first down marker, when they need to score, when they need to do this, or those utility package plays. And I think that is, it's going to be interesting to see. Now, they didn't get any reps in the preseason, which makes me nervous about the ability to implement this on the fly, but at least it's a theory that's in the back of JJ Redick's head already, that this is something that the Lakers will need to do. They'll need to run stuff that involves Luka, that involves LeBron, that involves Austin. And I thought actually that we got a little hint of it a couple of games ago when there was a play on the left wing where Austin and DeAndre Ayton ran a pick and roll together and Luka was spaced out to the opposite side of the court, but not spaced out and not a threat. He was just not involved in the immediate pick and roll. And Austin and DeAndre Ayton run their pick and roll. Austin gets into the middle of the paint, kicks the ball out to Luka, who has somebody close out on him. He attacks that closeout, gets into the paint into a better position than Austin was in. And I think he got fouled. So either he made the basket and it led to an and one, or he got fouled and just got to the free throw line. And stuff like that, like where it is LeBron and Austin running that pick and roll, whether it's inverted or traditional, whether it's Luka and Austin running an inverted pick and roll with LeBron spaced out to the opposite side, whether it's those guys running pick and roll, but with like LeBron in the dunker spot, or you know, Ayton in the dunker spot, or if you're running horns stuff where Austin has the ball up top and he has the opportunity with you know, LeBron and Luka at each elbow or elbow extended, those kinds of things are things that, like, I, you know, as soon as LeBron is healthy, which according to Dave McMenamin, they're hoping that the timetable there is around 3 weeks or so. As soon as LeBron gets healthy, that is going to be the thing I'm going to be watching for. And look, I do want to be, you know, in the interest of fairness, I was one of the people who were like, hey, it's a little weird that LeBron, you know, sat there on the sideline like a statue who did not show any interest in the game. He has since been more involved on the sideline, which I think has been good to see. And then look, I'd retweeted him tweeting out, you know, how well Austin played against Sacramento. It's good to see that, you know, LeBron is keeping close tabs on this and he is invested enough to care about that stuff. So I don't know. I'm with you in that it's something that I'm interested in. I do think that there are play packages or set packages that could take advantage of those three guys together. I do think there's also, by the way, value in having those guys spaced in a way where one of them is on the weak side and one or two of them are on the primary side. Like, I think that's also something that the Lakers benefit from because of how well Luka and LeBron throw skip passes. So that's something that the Lakers should be looking to take advantage of. Big thing is you need to be able to throw a variety of pitches. And over the course of, you know, between whenever Luka comes back and whenever LeBron comes back to the playoffs and throughout the playoffs, to me, the number one priority for the Lakers this season is going to be implementing as many sets and as thorough a system as they can that involves all three of those guys and makes all three of them threats. Whenever any of them are on the court. Let's see. Next question is, yeah, I'm telling you, George, like, cause this is a comment in reference to the person who is really angry at me for not answering literally every question that came into the chat. Like, scroll through the chat right now. You know how long I would be here if I answered every single comment? I'm going to get to as many of them as I possibly can. It incentivizes you guys to get here early, which also, by the way, incentivizes you to like the channel or turn on your notifications so that you can get your comments in here as quickly as possible. You see how this works? It's almost like we think about these things. We got a start comment here, which means I get to play this bad boy. Always. All right. So the comment that we got here is from Green, who says, you don't think someone is going to offer AR a max? No, I think it's possible that somebody is going to offer AR a max. It might even be that that team is the Lakers. The thing is, one, the Lakers can offer the maxiest max, right? They can offer the biggest max because he is, you know, they are his current team and they have that advantage. Two, I think the number there is like 5 years, $240 million, which equates to $48 million a year. That would be a little steep for me, but like, you know, if a team offers it, the Lakers can come over the top if they so choose. But more importantly is the timing there, because the Lakers, like I said earlier, are going to have an exclusive negotiating window with Austin. And I would go so far as to predict that they would come to some kind of an agreement during that negotiating window that would allow them to take care of whatever else that they need to take care of, and then, you know, sign Austin to whatever number the two sides agree to. And I would also point to this, because my running theory on JJ Redick's extension and Rob Pelinka's extension is that that was a form of protection and or a golden parachute, just in case Jeannie Buss isn't allowed to continue on as primary governor. Now, this decision would come after the transition of power, I would imagine. But Jeannie Buss, Linda Rambis, the people at the very tip top of this organization are all huge Austin Reeves fans. And normally players who have that relationship with ownership and with upper management, those guys tend to stick around. And the organization tends to figure out a way to allow them to stick around. So if Jeannie is allowed to remain as primary governor, I would put it at like a 1% chance that Austin is not a Laker beyond this season. All right, let's go to the next super chat or the next. I'm going to go back up here. All right, Darren Coolidge, Rui and Ayton need to step up. What do they need to do? Well, Rui needs to rebound. Like, I'm sorry, he is way too big and physically gifted to have so little an impact on possession. He doesn't turn teams over, right? He's not the kind of defender who's going to go out and get you a bunch of steals. He doesn't block shots. Given the tools that he has to work with, the best way for him to impact the possession battle in a basketball game is to go out and get rebounds on either side of the ball, whether it's offensive rebounding or defensive rebounding. And he's not like, no, I would be able to kind of forgive some of the lack of actual statistical rebounding if he was great at boxing out, but he's not very good at that either. He's just kind of a negative presence when it comes to rebounding. And if he, like, when you ask me, like, what do they need to do for Rui specifically? Knock down your open threes and rebound the piss out of the basketball. Those are the two things that I'm looking at with him. With DeAndre Ayton, right? Get on your horse, get out in transition, get back in transition. I actually think like Ayton, like knocking down the mid-range jumper has been really good. I think, you know, knocking down the floaters and stuff like that has been good. I've been really impressed with the caliber of screens that he is setting. I think he's among the league leaders in screen assists. That has been really good to see. Ayton, though, has been a little inconsistent defensively. I did think that Klingon got the better of him last night, especially physically. So, like, again, it just comes to physicality with those two guys. Those guys are huge. Both DeAndre Ayton and Rui Hachimura are huge people. And that's even in terms of like NBA terms relative to other NBA players. Those guys are both huge people. they need to be kind of your enforcers. They need to be go out there and like DeAndre Ayton needs to make people think twice about going into the paint with the occasional hard foul. Same goes for Rui Hachimura. What have you ever seen Rui throw like a cheap shot? Like, have you ever seen Rui get like a flagrant foul? Use that physicality, dude. You know, I think he's good with physicality when it comes to offense, and he's good at sticking in his shoulder and creating space that way. But I want to see that some of that physicality on the defensive side of the ball. I want to see him go out there and be the kind of presence that, you know, just sucks to play against, because every second that you're out there, he's giving you the elbow in the rib or something like that. And trust me, an elbow in the rib from Rui Hachimura would really, really hurt. Scroll back up here. The next question is your thoughts on using Reeves to gain depth and picks for the future. The problem with that is any team that you trade Austin Reeves to will understand the risk of losing him immediately. And like the Lakers did this thing with the Dallas Mavericks this last year where they traded for Luka Doncic and Dallas asked for, rightly, everything under the moon. But Rob kind of limited what his offer was going to be. And one of the reasons that he cited was that he didn't have the opportunity to speak to Luka and, you know, get a sense for how Luka would eventually feel about an extension. That isn't to say that the Lakers were ever nervous about ever being able to come to terms on an extension. It was more so that it was like, all right, we don't know. And Rob used that as leverage to be able to not have to make a absolutely, you know, like put everything on the table that teams around the league were expecting the Lakers to have to put on the table by acquiring Luka. And teams would do just that with the Lakers, with Austin, where the Lakers would say, okay, Austin, for your prospects and picks and stuff like that, what do you say? And that team would be like, well, we like Austin. We think he would fit really well here. However, we don't know that he's definitely going to re-sign with us. And as such, we aren't going to put everything on the table that you would expect to get for an Austin Reeves, because he's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. And that is like when it comes to trading Austin, like the time to trade Austin, frankly, was last year. If you were hell-bent on trading Austin, that was the time to do it. Even if like those teams probably would be able to get in touch with Austin's people and obviously completely legally figure out the chances that Austin would re-sign after opting out this upcoming season and what kind of contract he would be looking for. They would probably be able to do that, again, totally legally, but they would want the Lakers to operate under the assumption that they wouldn't be able to do that and that they don't know the chances that Austin would re-sign and thus bring down what their offer would have to be. So like the trading Austin thing is kind of a non-starter for me in a variety of ways, but just in terms of like asset management and the way that those negotiations would go with whatever team you're looking to trade Austin to, it's made very complicated by the fact that Austin is going to be a free agent right after this season and doesn't have the built-in relationship that he currently does with the Lakers. The whole reason that I was confident that the Lakers would be able to keep him beyond this season and that the, you know, those negotiations, you know, on that contract are going to go smoothly or will probably go smoothly has a lot to do with the fact that I know that Jeannie Buss and Austin's representation have a very good relationship and that Rob Pelinka and Austin's representation have a very good relationship. That is, I'm not saying that isn't the case with other teams out there, but it might not be the case, or those teams would want it, would negotiate from a standpoint of like, that might be a potential weakness. We just don't know. So like, if you're asking for a 10 out of 10 offer,
Here's a 6.5 out of 10 offer.
All right. Next question here comes from Moneyboy 277. Sell high on Reeves or keep him. I just talked about that. I would keep him. Sky Falcon 5. That was a crazy game. The Dodgers game? I don't know. Last night's Lakers Blazers game was fairly straightforward. That was a pretty predictable loss to me. Omaris Hall, Rob Pelinka picking other teams' trash. That's why. Rob Pelinka don't have the vision. I'm sorry. I've been saying that for years. Yeah, the Rob thing, like, I actually think Pete and I have talked about this quite a bit, and Pete has talked about it on his show too. But, like, I think Rob is a very good executor of ideas. I don't know that Rob has very many productive ideas on his own. I don't think he has very much of a basketball vision of his own. But if the Lakers were to somehow go out and get somebody who does have that basketball vision, I do think Rob is very good at, you know, following instructions and carrying out tasks, which is, by the way, a lot of times what an agent's job is, right? Like an agent, a client will go to an agent and say, hey, I would like to get into this business. What do you think about this as a project? What do you think about this? And an agent will go and talk to people from those walks of life, and they'll try to figure out like what they, you know, their client might be able to do in various sectors and what the best path forward is for their client in those sectors. And they'll go back to their client and say, hey, all right, so if you're looking to do this, if you want to make movies, here's who I've set you up with to talk to about movies. If you want to do commercials, all right, here's who I could set you up with to do commercials. If you want to do, you know, what you want, a shoe company, you want a better shoe deal, here's who I could line up to get you a better shoe deal. And those are the things that agents, now agents also come to their clients with ideas too, sometimes too. But I think Rob is more of a, like, I think part of the reason that he and Kobe worked really well together was Kobe had like a ton of ideas, right? He was a very creative guy. And I think he would go to Rob and he would say, hey, I think I want to do this when I'm done with my playing career. I want to do this at the tail end of my playing career. And, you know, how do we make this happen? And Rob would go out and put together paths forward that would help Kobe execute his vision. And what the Lakers are really missing, and what they have been basically missing, I think, throughout the entirety of Rob's tenure, has been a consistent vision, a real basketball philosophy. The Lakers just haven't had that. They've had LeBron tell Rob, hey, I want a ball handler to lighten my load over the course of the regular season. And Rob says, all right, here's Dennis Schroeder, or here's Russell Westbrook. You'll have Luka say, I want a lob threat center. All right, here's Mark Williams. Or I want a better center after having Jackson Hayes only last year. Okay, here's DeAndre Ayton. And I think Rob is very good at executing those things, but I don't think he's very good when it comes to building out his own vision. And look, carrying out other people's vision, that's a great way to remain employed. And I at the end of the day, I think that's always been Rob's top priority. All right. Miles is taking a good long nap, so we got a little more time here for the for a few more questions here. So D-Russ, the problem was Rob Pelinka was sitting with his son's possess and stalling during the LBJ AD era because he was waiting for it to end. So he didn't trade his first round picks, ending up with JHS and Dalton Connect. It should also be pointed out, like, this isn't just a Rob, like, you don't arrive at the spot where the Lakers are where they both don't have draft assets or tradable assets, and they also don't have young prospects who can supplement win-now talent. You don't arrive here without help, right? And
Rob Pelinka, for all of his flaws, you know, his scouting department has frankly really let him down. And Jalen Hood-Schifino was a bust of a pick. Dalton Kincaid is looking kind of bustish, right? Maxwell Lewis was a whiff of a pick. We'll see what happens here with Dero. But to this point, he hasn't been able to get healthy, let alone stay. So, like, at the end of the day, like, the these if everybody always waxes poetic about how great Jesse and Joey Buss are, and I don't know how many comments I've gotten over the years of, like, you know, whenever Mark Walter takes over, can we keep Jesse? Can we keep Joey? And it's like, I don't really care if they do or not. I think they have a pretty good track record. And I know a lot of people point to Austin Reeves as part of that track record. Austin Reeves' agency really guided him to the Lakers. That was much more an agency thing than it was a Lakers finding this unearthed diamond or this this deeply buried diamond. The Lakers draft and scouting department just hasn't been very fruitful recently. So it is one of those things where, like, whenever Mark Walter takes over, I don't care that Jesse and Joey stick around. Like, that's not really a very high priority to me. What I would prefer is that Walter, I think it's a matter of when, not if, but whenever he decides to just completely clean house and rebuild this organization, I think what you're going to, like, this is what he did with the Dodgers. He gave Don Mattingly and Ned Colletti the opportunity to prove that they should stick around. And then they didn't, right? They didn't prove that they should stick around. And Mark Walter and Stan Cat, like, they brought in, you know, Andrew Friedman, and they brought in Farhan Zaidi, and they brought in Alex Anthopoulos, and they brought in this, like, murderer's row of baseball executives, and they built out the organization. They solidified the scouting department. They re-solidified. The Dodgers always had a pretty good international scouting department, but they thoroughly solidified that. They enhanced the development teams throughout the organization, and they optimized coaching at the minor league levels and at the assistant coaching levels at the major league with the major league team, and they did all of this stuff right with unlimited resources, because that was what they were bringing to the table. And I think eventually, like, it wouldn't surprise me if whenever Mark Walter takes over, we start to get some, like, the Lakers are really interested in Sam Presti type noise, and the Lakers are really interested. Now, they didn't go out and sign the best manager or like a proven baseball manager. What they did with Dave Roberts is they scoured they wanted a first time manager. They scoured the manager. I remember at one point, because I covered this entire process when I was running Dodgers Nation. But they scoured the managerial, especially young managerial ranks. They talked to something like 13 or 15 different managerial prospects. Eventually landed on Dave Roberts at one point. Like, they talked to a guy who eventually won a World Series with Washington. They talked to, like, they were every other day, it was some new managerial prospect that they interviewed. Eventually landed on Dave Roberts. And I think you'll probably see a relatively similar pathway to replacing JJ Redick if they ever decide to replace JJ Redick. So, like, that's how I see this playing out. It won't happen immediately. Those processes take time. But to get back to D Russ's comment here, like, the scouting department can go. The draft and scouting department can go. I don't really have much affinity for oh God, what are the Lakers going to do without Jesse and Joey Buss? I don't think it's really that serious. Let's see. The next question. So some of this is that you guys are kind of talking to each other here. So I'm looking for questions Yeah, I'm looking for questions specifically, and I'm not really seeing any. I do see a whole bunch of like debate over Austin, and I still see a lot of people who are like still adamantly anti-Austin. That's crazy. The intellect, since Rob took over, he has mismanaged our picks since 2020. The only good player we acquired is Max Christie. The Lakers are failing at player development. Mark Walters, please step in. Yep, that's a continuation of the point that I just made. All right. By the way, I'm curious what you guys think about this, because I've been thinking about this lately. I think I would give up a first round pick for Max Christie. Like, if it was Gabe and a first to bring back Max Christie, not saying I've heard anything about that, but if you could put Max in between, and even if it isn't a first, like if you could get him for less than a first, even better. But if I could get like the, you know, Dallas is like desperate for ball handling, right? So if you could send Gabe and a second and a pick swap for Max Christie, I would very, very happily do that. And, you know, I would go as high as a first rounder for him, because Max is still young. He's productive right now. While he's young, he's going to get better. One of the things that the Lakers have really kind of run into over the years is they trade for older assets because they, like Rob has always been reluctant to go all in. And those younger assets who are still appreciating, those guys tend to cost more than Rob has been willing to pay. And as such, he's been trading for the Dorian Finney-Smiths of the world, who, yeah, he was good for the Lakers last year, but then he immediately declined as an asset or as a player. He still hasn't played for Houston, which, by the way, backs up the reporting I did over the summer when I said that Rob was telling teams that Dorian was dealing with an ankle thing. But we don't keep tracks on wins, I guess. But yeah, the thing with the Lakers is that like they keep on trading for, you know, assets either at the top of their value or like on their way down. And that means that after you've traded for that asset, if you ever lose that asset, you're losing it for nothing probably, or you're losing it for less than what you paid to get it. Nice thing with Max is you could trade for Max Christie now. He's going to probably continue getting better over the next couple of years or so. And if you ever do come to the conclusion that you need a bigger Max Christie or something like that, or you need something else, if you do ever wind up trading Max Christie, you could do so at a higher price than you traded him, than you traded to get him. So I'm curious. Let me know what you guys think moving forward about Max Christie as a trade target. Cause I know dealing with Dallas is kind of tricky and all that stuff, but he's very close to the type of player who I would really like to see the Lakers bring in. Let's see. I am going to go ahead and get out of here. It's been an hour. So yeah. AR for Maxi. Do you think Philly would do it? Absolutely not. I think, let me see how old Tyrese Maxi is. Yeah. Tyrese Maxey's 24. Like, he's 2-3 years younger than Austin, and he's playing basketball at a level commensurate with Austin. So I don't, Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe is going to be the backcourt of the future for Philly. I would venture a guess that like Tyrese Maxey is like pretty damn close to untouchable to the Philadelphia 76ers, especially for a player in Austin who could just turn around and leave in free agency. I don't see that. And by the way, like, I think Maxey presents a lot of the same issues that you guys are frustrated over Austin over. Like, he's not the best defender. He's an on-ball scorer. You know, like, if you're going to trade Austin, at least trade for somebody who fits a little bit better, not like a better, younger version of Austin. I don't really see that. Oh, here we go. CJ Vos, thoughts on the Lakers trading for Grimes during the season? I think even with a full healthy squad, we could use another scorer off of the bench. What is the most you would trade for him? Scoring isn't the problem here. Like, the problem is that the Lakers are a soft team. You know, like DeAndre Ayton, not a very physical guy. Rui, we talked about this with Rui earlier. LeBron being like the most physical player that you have has been the deal for the last basically couple of years, and or like LeBron and AD being the most physically imposing players. Like, the Lakers need toughness. They don't need another scorer. Like, you have Luka Doncic, who's going to average around 30. You have Austin Reeves, who is probably going to average around 20 plus or so, I would say, by the end of the season. LeBron could average another 25 points a game. Like, your scoring is perfectly fine to me. What the Lakers need is somebody who gets after it defensively at the point of attack, somebody who's willing to dive on the floor, who sets hard screens, who fouls hard, who, like, the Lakers need some oomph on their team. And Quentin Grimes is not an oomph type of player. Also, Quentin Grimes has been unhappy basically everywhere he's been. And I like, you know, he had some really kind of ugly negotiations with Philadelphia over the summer. He, you know, his college team, there was some animosity there too, I believe. I think at Kentucky there, you know, Dallas was happy enough to trade him in a second just to kind of get him out of there too. Like, it's just, you know, I scoring isn't the Lakers' problem. The Lakers might be a bottom third defensive team, even when they're fully healthy. And there is zero examples of a team winning a championship with a bottom third defense. So until the Lakers address that, I don't really care about scoring off of the bench and stuff. The Lakers are going to be able to stagger Luka and Austin and LeBron, and that'll take care of your off-the-bench scoring or your bench scoring. To me, their much bigger problem is their starting defense or the defensive players who, you know, completely shoot their offense in the arm. The Lakers need two-way help. And Quentin Grimes, he's a nice player, but he's not the kind of defender that the Lakers need. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for your questions. Got a ton of them today, so thank you for that. Really, really appreciate that. If you guys have any extra questions left over, hit me with them in the form of a 5-star review or in the Discord. Do you guys want the link to the Discord to be able? Dylan Brooks, I think, Flex Cuts is a good name to bring up there. Let's see, where's my Discord link? I'll go ahead and drop that in the chat here as well, so that if you guys want to continue the conversation there, you can. But yeah, as I said, this is going to be the lounge for the day, and then I'll record a lowdown also a little bit later for you guys, you know, in the morning. And then when it comes to the rest of the week, we have Raj and I after the game tomorrow, Harrison and I on Thursday, and Pete and I in the hook on Friday. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I am Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I will talk to you in a little bit.